Hey guys, welcome back to Real Time Crime. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Jadai.
And today we will be covering the case, it's very well known, Gabriel Fernandez. It's such a sad and tragic case. It makes me cry every time I hear about it. But we do want to let you know that we're going to be going on a bit of a summer break. So this is going to be our only case for the month of July, and we will see you back in August. So take it away, Jadai.
So as Hannah mentioned, this case is very well known, and there's a lot to this case. This case is very deep and it's very emotional. So I want to focus this episode for today on just a lot of the facts and a lot of the base information, because there is a lot of controversy and it's very deep. So I'm going to focus on a lot of the facts, and I'm also going to link some of the sources in the description box. There's a Netflix documentary. It's a 6-episode series, very informative, very detailed. It's a total of over 6 hours long. If you guys are interested in watching it, I'll also include some YouTube videos and other sources that you guys can watch. Just overall, it's very emotional. So I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty of it. So like I said, I'll just do like the general information of it. So Gabriel Daniel Fernandez was born on February 20th, 2005 to Pearl Fernandez and Arnold Contreras and in LA in California. Sources stated that Pearl abandoned Gabriel at the hospital for 3 days. Therefore, he was taken into the child welfare system at birth. After he was abandoned, he was placed with his great uncle and his partner. So his great uncle and his partner together raised Gabriel for about 4 years, and Pearl didn't really have any contact with him. So after 4 years, one day Pearl randomly decided that she was no longer okay with her son being raised by a same-sex couple. So then she fought for Gabriel to go with her parents. So then Gabriel was removed from her great uncle, who raised him for 4 years, and was then moved to his grandparents' house. So from the ages 4 to 8, he was living with his grandparents and was being raised by his grandparents. In 2012, Pearl regained custody of Gabriel, and he was able to move back in with her. And this is really where all the torture and hell starts for Gabriel, unfortunately. At this point, I'm going to backtrack a little bit and talk about Pearl. She grew up in what she described an abusive home, and she said that she just felt like she was never loved by her parents. They hit her, and she started using meth and drinking by the age of 9. By 11, she left and ran away from her home. She dropped out of school by 8th grade, and she also reported that as a teenager, she was gang raped and abused many times by multiple men. Every relationship that she had, she was abused and raped, which eventually led her to have suicidal thoughts early on as a teenager. So eventually she met Arnold Contreras, whom she had 4 children with, one of them being Gabriel. They also had a horrible and abusive relationship, and they didn't stay much longer, but they did have 4 children together. Pearl was diagnosed with multiple mental health disorders, such as major depressive disorder, PTSD, personality disorder, and a developmental disability. The death of Gabriel Fernandez is by far one of the most and the worst and the most tragic stories I've ever seen. And you guys know that have been listening to us, we've covered some gruesome stories. Like, we've seen a story about a bodysuit. We've heard about butchering. We've heard horrible stories, but this one has been gut-wrenching, and it's just been horrible. When I was watching the documentary on Netflix, I literally from minute like two, I started crying nonstop. So if you guys watch it, you guys will know what I'm talking about. And even when I watch YouTube videos, then I watch just looking at pictures of Gabriel, he was such an innocent soul. I still choke up. And when I talk about it, I will eventually cry about him, but it's so sad. And just when I get into more detail, you guys will understand why. Gabriel's death was essentially caused by such extensive abuse and neglect from his parents. Well, I should say rather Pearl and her boyfriend, because at this point, Arnold, which is Gabriel's biological father, was no longer in his life. Pearl met Isauro Aguirre in 2010, 2 years before she regained Gabriel's custody. He was a caregiver at a retirement hotel, which is so ironic. When I read this, it was so hard for me to believe. He was a caregiver. It sounds like he was a CNA caregiver at a retirement hotel. And when I was reading reports and sources, his boss and other coworkers described him as a big teddy bear. Like, what? A big teddy bear? That's not how you describe someone that murders a child. It's just not. So it's ironic that he was able to care and work in the long-term care field and have the healthcare field and still have, you know, the balls to beat an 8-year-old to death. It's insane to me. I still can't wrap my head around it.
I didn't know that, or like, I just don't remember that. And that doesn't make any sense because he's awful to get, like, we're going to talk about it, but does it come from him being so nice at work? Then it's all like, I mean, it's not an excuse, but where does that come from?
Oh, and in one of the sources I read, they go into, his boss goes into detail about how he would take care of the elderly. Like, he would change their diapers. He would take them like on car rides, and he would go the extra mile for his residents. One of them even said, like, well, if he had to transport them somewhere, he would take the scenic route just so that they would have a nice view instead of just them having to see the highway. Or he would take them and take, like, go to the forest so they could see the forest instead of just like having a boring view. So his coworkers loved him and his boss had nothing bad to say about him. But then you turn around and you beat an innocent 8-year-old to death. It's, I don't know where it stems from. He does have a reason, and I'll go into it. He does have a reason why he did it, which still doesn't make sense to me. So it's insane. So the abuse was first reported to the child welfare hotline by one of Gabriel's teachers, Jennifer Garcia, after she noticed that he had multiple bruises on his head and face. So as protocol, you know, teachers are mandated reporters. An LA County DCFS social worker was dispatched to the home after she received the call. And she arrived to the home. And I think this is the first red flag. And I don't want to be biased. This is another, like, disclaimer that I'm going to make, because I've worked in DCFS before and I don't want to be biased. But I feel like, unfortunately, he was failed, as you know, from the system. So when the social worker got to the home, she only spoke to Pearl, the mom, and never did the social worker lay eyes on Gabriel. Never did she speak privately to Gabriel.
I was gonna ask you too, is like, did you have a, like, would it be mandatory for you to also speak to the child? Like, you couldn't just go to the house and be like, no, okay, everything's fine. Like, you have, yeah, have to speak to.
And like, I have to go to a room like where no one can hear us. And it, like, I literally have to go to a private room, even if it's the bathroom, even if it's like my car, I have to be like, I need to talk to you privately where no one can hear us.
Okay. And do you know if it's just state by state it's different, or do you think it was just the times that it was different? Because this
I think, and that's why I don't want to go into it, but yeah. In a lot of the sources that I read, like, the reason why they were charged was because they were falsifying the records.
Okay.
They were saying, like, they were falsifying the records to make the abuse seem like it was not as bad as it was. So, like, either they were lazy or they were not, or like they got caught up in like not doing their job. And then like when he died, they were like, oh shit, like he died. And then like, I never actually talked to him. So let me go falsify this document. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So like, okay. I should have talked to him privately and I didn't. And now he's dead. So then that's when they falsified the documents.
Okay. So after the death, they fixed the documents, yeah. Because before the death, they just weren't doing the
they weren't doing thing. Anything. They weren't. Okay. So like, and then in another document, like he had his bruise from the get-go, from the first call, his bruises were so extensive, they didn't even bother doing a medical exam. Like if that would have been me, I would have had to take the child to like a DCFS medical office to have him examined, like yeah. A full body check. They didn't even do that. So if they would have done that, they would have seen like he had internal bleeding, he had a broken bone, he had bruising all over his body.
Well, yeah, if it was enough to be seen on the face, I can't imagine what the not public skin looks like.
Exactly. So he would have been removed from the home from that like first date. But because they didn't do any of that, they didn't even bother seeing him. They didn't lay eyes on him, nothing. They like nothing happened.
And he's what, 7?
8.
He was 8 years old at this point.
After the social worker got to their home, she only spoke to Pearl. And if she would have laid eyes on Gabriel, which she never did, she would have realized the extent of the abuse that Gabriel was, you know, going through at this point. So from personal experience, when I was working in foster care, we would have to go through speaking and laying eyes on the children like privately. So I'm sure Illinois and California have different regulations, but nonetheless, you know, when you have allegations of abuse and neglect, you still have to, like I said, lay eyes on the children first and go to a private room and then speak to the child and, you know, ask them like, what's going on? Are they hitting you? Like just what's going on? And the social worker didn't even do that. Like she took Pearl's word for like, she literally just took her word. And obviously Pearl is not going to say, yeah, I'm beating the shit out of my son. So that's it. So like I said, if someone would have laid eyes on Gabriel, they would have seen the extent. Then they would have been able to take him to a medical exam. From this medical exam, they would have been able to see that he had bruising all over his body. His bruising was so intense. It was insane. He had internal bleeding from so many beatings. It was horrendous. It was insane. So from the get-go, this abuse would have been stopped and he would have been removed from the home. Unfortunately, though, this was not the case, and the abuse kept going and going and going. And even the teacher said, I kept calling, and nothing kept happening. I think she called as much as like at least once a week. You know, Gabriel kept showing up with bruises on his face, with like bruised up lips, and like he would show up with like knots and bumps on his head. So he was like obviously being beat, and she was just so confused. Like, I'm calling this child abuse hotline and nothing is happening. So really, what is going on? So as social workers kept going into the house, the cases were just unfounded. I think primarily because they were just not talking to Gabriel. They were not digging deep enough to even see what was truly going on. If you're only talking to Pearl, obviously she's going to say, no, I don't abuse my child. And they essentially, they were not even going into the home, because if you take a look at the pictures of the home and their living conditions, they were not living conditions. Their bed was horrible. There was blood everywhere. And I'll get into that later, but their living conditions were not livable to begin with. So if the social worker would have seen that, she would have been able to dig deeper also.
And it was an apartment, right?
Yeah, it was an apartment.
Mm-hmm. So where is she meeting with Pearl and talking to Pearl that she's not seeing that the living conditions aren't so
during the, this was a while ago, and I can't remember if I'm like remembering correct. I think I saw a YouTube video that, so I saw a picture from the outside of their apartment. She has like a little balcony. So she lived on the second floor of like an apartment. So either the social worker never fully went inside, or they were just meeting like in their living room area or even their balcony. So their bedroom was horrible. Like, that's where it was horrible. Their bathroom was also horrible because they were beating him like in the bathtub, in the bathroom area, and even in the kitchen. That's where like mostly everything was going on. So over and over, the cases were unfounded, but like I said, the teachers just kept seeing the abuse going on. She kept calling, and over, the social workers kept failing Gabriel because they would just oversee everything. And in my opinion, everything just kept happening in front of their eyes. There is a school picture where they had done a project for Mother's Day, and Gabriel painted a picture for his mom for Mother's Day. But in the picture, he's holding the painting for his mom and he's smiling because obviously it's a picture for Mother's Day, but he has a black eye because he was beat the day before. And in the documentary, the teacher talks about this, saying Gabriel loved his mom unconditionally. He drew this picture for his mom for Mother's Day, and he was so excited to give this for his mom for Mother's Day. And just to see that just the day before she had beat the dog shit out of him and he still goes to school the next day and smiles for a picture for him. It's just, he loved her unconditionally despite, you know, the abuse that he was going through. He just wanted her to love him, and she didn't, but he still loved her. That was his mom. That was his person. And all, he just wanted to be loved. It's so sad.
Just a title, like second grader, right?
Yeah.
And I remember too, he was like malnourished and stuff. So he was always really little too. So just I just keep picturing this little kid just like wanting his mom to love him. It's turning my stomach all over again.
So I keep saying that the abuse that Gabriel went through was intense, you guys, but I haven't even gotten into like what he actually went through. The abuse started in 2012, like literally once Pearl regained his custody, up until the day of his death on May 22nd, 2013. So for a little over a year, all he knew was abuse and neglect and beating from the person that he loved the most. And he was regularly abused by both Isauro and Pearl. So fair warning, this is where I start describing everything that he went through. If you want to fast forward, maybe a couple of minutes, but this is where it gets into the nitty gritty of everything. So Pearl and Isauro locked him up in a cabinet, in a kitchen cabinet where he slept. They called it the box. They starved him and they forced him to eat cat litter. He was forced to eat expired and spoiled foods. And obviously he would eat them because of how starved he was. After, you know, eating spoiled foods, he would then become sick and throw up the food. Then they would force him to eat his throw up. He was tied down, gagged, choked, and beat with a belt. Isauro shot him with a BB gun in his face, his head, his torso, and his legs. Doctors said that the damage from the BB gun caused his brain to feel like Rice Krispies. Like, literally, it made his brain just, like shatter. Like, can you imagine? They literally shot his brain with the BB gun. During the last few days leading up to his death, Isauro beat him with a bat and some of his teeth fell out. During the trial, Isauro stated that this abuse stemmed from the belief that Gabriel was gay and essentially Pearl was like his accomplice. They both believed that he was gay and they were trying to discipline, quote unquote, discipline him. And this was their way of like, quote unquote, taking the gay out of him. But essentially they killed him. They killed him and beat the shit out of him for a year and killed him. So on May 22nd, after Pearl and Isauro literally beat him like all day long, he was not responding. And Pearl called 911 and she told the dispatcher that he had slipped in the tub and was not responding. He was rushed to Children's Hospital in LA. And when he got to the hospital, the nurses and doctors said that it was the worst case they had seen in years. One of the nurses said that she had been a nurse for 30 years and she like literally like had to clock out and go home because she was crying. They said that he was unrecognizable. He was beat so badly that the nurses just didn't even want to work on him. He was pronounced brain dead immediately. However, he died 2 days later on May 24th, 2013. The injuries that he sustained were immense. He had hundreds of broken bones, bruises all over his body, cuts and wounds everywhere, and just something that they had never, ever seen before. I am going to post pictures and videos in the sources box. I have some pictures and graphics that show like where exactly he had his wounds and his broken bones. They are pretty graphic. Literally, it's a body graph and his whole body is like marked off full of wounds and bruises.
A nurse who was experienced with 30 years, who presumably was working in the ER at the time too, which yeah, means that she sees a lot of stuff. Yes. Had to clock out and go home.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like I mentioned, he was pronounced dead May 24th, 2013, at the age of 8. Pearl and Isauro were both taken into custody and charged with child abuse and first degree murder. After a long trial, Isauro was sentenced to the death penalty and does not yet have a death date yet. He is currently at Richard Donovan Correctional Facility where he awaits execution. Pearl was sentenced to life prison without the possibility of parole. So just last April of 2021, she filed a petition for resentencing, which obviously was denied by the same judge that gave her life in prison. So she remains in prison without the possibility of parole. And she's currently serving her time at Central California Women's Facility.
So to end this episode, I want to just touch base on the social worker and DCFS aspect of this case. I mentioned earlier in the episode that my personal beliefs and a lot of other people believed that DCFS and just the system overall failed Gabriel Fernandez. I do want to make a point that I don't want people to lose hope in DCFS and the system because I believe that this is the extreme end of, you know, the system failing children. But mainly, I don't want people to lose hope in the system because Gabriel, yes, was failed. And this is so unfortunate that, you know, he died. And I don't even know where I'm going with this. I'm just so sad.
Yeah, this is just the extreme of what can happen. And on the other end, you know, it's really good. It gets kids out of bad situations and gets them into places where they'll be loved and cared for.
So that's all we have for today's episode. There's no real big takeaway. But I will leave some sources in the description box. The link to the Netflix documentary and some links to some YouTube videos that I was watching as well. And also our sources, obviously. But like I said, the sources are very gruesome. And I only went through like the facts. This case is very deep. So please just be aware that there's a lot more into this case. So if you do want to watch the Netflix documentary, please be prepared. So that's all I have for today's episode. Please be on the lookout on our Instagram and other social media for the date for our next episode, and when our summer break will be over. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will see you all.